living outside the law. I'm waiting for the ice to thaw. Just listen for the crow to call. Again and again we were singing. If you want it, if you want it, well, you're gonna have to take it from me. If you want it, well, it's all for sale. Never gonna give it for free. If you want it, if you want it, well, you're gonna have to give me something. If you want it, well, I need to know. Never gonna get
conversation, but it's just a string of empty words. We've been carving out a smile, all you wanna do is burst. Well, there's nothing you could hide that could ever be too dark to tell. And I'm crossing all my fingers that you'll come out of your shell. And now you can hang your heart up on my wall, just the way it is, the way you are. Yeah, you can hang your heart up on my wall. Now won't let it down, won't let you fall. Trying to put my finger on the thing that really makes you glow. I've been soaking up your eyes, you don't even seem to know. I know it's not easy, and I know it gets so dark, but I'm sure it would be harder if I didn't have your spark. Yeah. The way it is, the way you are. I need you to hang your heart up on my wall. I won't let it go, won't let you fall.
All aboard, I heard my brother say, all aboard, like it's some parade. That's me! That was stolen.
So how'd you keep going?
I put my shoulder to the wheel and I just kept rolling.
You can call it religion, walking into the mystic.
When the powers of people,
I don't get pessimistic.
Standing shoulder to shoulder, I hold my head high.
Standing shoulder to shoulder,
as we walk across the finish line.
All aboard, I heard my sister sing. All aboard, bring your offerings.
That's me!
Leave me.
a Waramps key tag, you're giving yourself peace of mind, and you're supporting the CHAMP program for child amputees. If you lose your keys, the Waramps can return them to you by courier with the help of your personalized key tag. Key return by courier. It's simple, fast, and it's free. What's more, thanks to your support, child amputees receive the artificial limbs they need to lead active lives. Order your key tags at 1-800-250-3030 or waramps.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Good morning. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. Hopefully everyone's doing all right today. This episode will be coming out for New Year's, but it's being recorded on Christmas Eve. But that's okay. So hopefully this will come out the 29th of December, right before New Year's. Now, because of that, I want to try and talk a little bit about New Year's, maybe about a few other things that relate to New Year's. So, remember last year I went pretty into detail about it, and I might repeat some of those facts again this year. But I will try and find something else to focus on that maybe we didn't cover last year. So without further ado, let's get started. So, for one, when is New Year's Eve and when is New Year's Day? Well, New Year's is on December 31st. New Year's Eve is December 31st, 2020, and New Year's Day is January 1st, 2021. The earliest known celebrations were where, and they date back how many years? The earliest known New Year's celebrations were in Mesopotamia and dated back to 2000 BC. The early Romans used March 1st as their New Year's Day, and other cultures used the autumn equinox or the winter solstice to mark the New Year. In 1582, the Gregorian calendar, which marks January 1st as the new year, was adopted by the Roman Catholic Church. January is named after Janus, the god with two faces, one looking forward and one looking backwards. Now, there's a lot of New Year's traditions. And it has long been a time when many people traditionally make resolutions to break bad habits or start good ones. Ancient Persians gave New Year's gifts of eggs, which symbolize productiveness. And most New Year's traditions are believed to ensure good luck for the coming year. Many parts of the U.S. observe the tradition of eating black-eyed peas on New Year's Day for good luck. Now, a lot of this info is coming from CNN, so a lot of it will be American. Now, what song is traditionally sung at midnight on New Year's Eve? Song would be Auld Lang Syne. And it was written by Scottish poet Robert Burns in 1788. And it may have been based on a folk song. The words Auld Lang Syne mean times gone by. Now, of course, there's also the Times Square celebration. The first one atop one Times Square, a firework display, took place in 1904. and was produced by the New York Times to inaugurate their new headquarters in Times Square and celebrate the renaming of Longest Square to Times Square. The first ball drop was held on December 31st, 1907. However, in 1942 and 43, it was suspended due to the wartime demo. The crowds who still gathered in Times Square celebrated with a minute of silence, followed by chimes ringing out from an fire truck parked at One Times Square. The original New Year's Eve ball weighed 700 pounds and was 5 feet in diameter, was made of iron and wood, and was decorated with 125-watt light bulbs. In November 11, 2008, a new New Year's Eve ball was introduced. It was a geodesic sphere, 12 feet in diameter, and weighing 11,875 pounds. It's built to withstand high winds and fluctuating temperatures. Waterford Crystal introduces a different pattern for each New Year's celebration. Now, this is the first bit I want to cover today. Just some basic facts, but a lot of these we have covered in last year's. This year, I'd like to take a look at maybe, you know, some more interesting calendars other than the Gregorian, as I think it would be a cool time to look at other ones. For example, let's look at the Chinese New Year. So, the Chinese New Year is always later than the regular New Year. And it is a big celebration. It is also called the Lunar New Year. And annually, it's a 15-day festival in China and Chinese community around the world that begins with the new moon that occurs sometime between January 21st and February 20th, according to Western calendars. They last until the following full moon. Chinese New Year occurs on Friday, February 12th, 2021, in many of the countries that celebrate it. Sometimes called the Lunar New Year because the dates of the celebration follow the phases of the moon. Since the mid-1990s, people in China have been given 7 consecutive days off work during the Chinese New Year. The week of relaxation has been designated Spring Festival, a term that is sometimes used to refer to the Chinese New Year in general. The origins of it are steeped in legend. One legend is that thousands of years ago, a monster named Nian Year would attack villagers at the beginning of each new year. It was afraid of loud noises, bright lights, and the color red. So those things were used to chase the beast away. Celebrations to usher out the old year and bring forth the luck and prosperity of a new one, therefore, often included firecrackers, fireworks, and red clothes and decorations. Young people are given money in colorful red envelopes. And in addition, Chinese New Year is a time to feast and visit family members. Many traditions of the season honor relatives who have died. Among other Chinese New Year traditions is the thorough cleaning of one's home to rid the resident of any lingering bad luck. Some people prepare and enjoy special foods on certain days during the celebration. The last event held during the New Year is called the Lantern Festival, which people hang glowing lanterns in temples or carry them during a nighttime parade. And since the dragon is a Chinese symbol of good fortune, a dragon dance highlights the festival celebration, highlights festival celebrations in many areas. The procession involves a long, colorful dragon being carried through the streets by numerous dancers. That is the Chinese New Year, which starts later than ours. It's kind of like our own celebration, but a lot crazier and looks a lot more fun. Now, we've covered the Romans and New Year's before. So this time I think we should go on to other civilizations and see how they celebrate their New Year. The next I want to cover just quickly is a calendar that made everyone think the world was going to end a while back. Now, this is a little harder to find info on. The last one I got from Britannica. This one I'm getting from like a Cancun visiting site. But the Mayans celebrate the New Year when? In July. According to the Hab Mayan calendar that follows the cycle of Earth in relation to the Sun, the New Year does not begin on January 1st, but rather July 26th each year. Unlike the Gregorian calendar that dominates the way much of the world calculates what day of the year it is through an arbitrary system inherited from the Romans for knowing when to collect taxes, the Mayan reckoning of time is calculated through a series of up to 17 cycles, each linked to the movements of the sun and moon, as well as the transits of planets like Venus, or even constellations like the Pleiades. For the Maya, July 26 each year marks the start of a new cycle and a new personality or essence for the year ahead, signaled by its own sign or glyph, such as seed, monkey, storm, and so on. However, the day out of time on July 25th, El Día Fuera del Tiempo, is perhaps more important for the Mayans than July 26th, in that it is a day to give thanks and to reflect on what has been achieved and what lessons are still to be learned. July 25th is a link day where new ventures should wait for the energy of the new year. It's also a time where anything can happen. To mark the Mayan celebrations, certain cities host special programs and activities to pay homage to the ancient Mayans. However, the Mayans are more or less a dead civilization, but a lot of their things still exist. Now, one thing about the Mayan calendar that some may remember was the whole idea that the world is going to end because the Mayan calendar says it's going to end. Now, this is kind of wrong, but it's really interesting to take a look at. In 2012, everyone was up in arms because I believe it was December 20th, 2012, the world was apparently supposed to end, which, of course, it didn't. Now, this is from ancient.eu, which is, I guess, ancient history. It's an ancient history site, and it's a kind of a published article, but it talks about it. Now, according to the calendar of the ancient Mayans, and the end of the world would be in December 2012 of CE. Now, back when 2012 was coming a thing, there was, you know, everything everywhere. The world is ending. Everything's going to end. The world is ending. And they even made movies about it. Now, they were even prominently displayed in popular books. And even a cursory source of the internet revealed multitudes of them. Now, I don't really remember it that well, but I do vaguely remember it. Now, each person had a different interpretation of it and of the Mayan calendar. Now, the underlying reason for the belief that the ending of the world was in 2012 was at least at least as associated with the Mayan calendar, went like this. The present cycle of the ancient Mayan long count calendar began on the 11th of August, 3114 BCE, and concluded on the 21st of December, 2012 CE. And because of this, the end of the world is a certainty. Or it was a certainty. Now, in order for the Mayan calendar to accurately predict the end of the world in any way, it would need to begin at the beginning of the world. And it's clear from archaeological, geological, and historical record that the world is much older than the beginning of the Mayan calendar. The great cities of Mesopotamia, such as Akkad, Eridu, had already risen to their height by the time the calendar is dated as beginning. The dynasties of Egypt were already old, and the Chinese and Indian civilizations in full flourish. The Mayan calculated the date of 3114 BC as the beginning of the world based on an earlier calendar by the Mixzoc people. Their forward astronomical predictions were based upon careful observation of the skies, but were understood according to the belief system which governed their understanding of how the universe worked. And that understanding was very cyclical, not linear. Vastly different from the theological and cosmological understanding espoused by the three great monotheistic religions. Time was itself a deity, and as such, had no end. There's therefore nothing in the cosmology of the Maya which suggests the end of anything, much less the end of the world. In 2012, everyone was up in arms because the world is ending, the world is ending. But the thing was, is it really was not ending. The calendar just ended. If we went by what happened in 2012, technically that would mean July 31st of 2020, we should all go crazy because it's the end of the world, because our calendar does not reach further than that. Or when we flipped the calendar last year, it was the end of the world, or the year previous, or the year previous, because apparently when the calendar ends, the world is going to end. At least that's what people were all up in arms about in 2012, and it became a big frenzy. But that was just kind of a dumb thing that had happened. Either way, there is a lot of interesting stories about it. It truly was just a little interesting blip in history. And that phenomenon eventually died out. However, there are other people that have suggested the world is going to end. Some very, very famous, even physicists and scientists. Some have actually speculated when it will end. And one of the people that did may shock you. One of the world's greatest scientists ever to ever live predicted that the world would end in 2060. Now, who predicted this? So Isaac Newton predicted that the world would end in 2060. He's legendary and is best known for establishing the laws of gravity, but in his free time he dabbled in experiments that were worthy of Voldemort. Newton actively sought the Philosopher's Stone, a mythical tool that allows mere mortals to turn objects into silver or gold, has the power to grant eternal life. Now, for Newton, this was very dangerous, because if he had been found out, this was considered treasonous and blasphemous, and he could have been claimed as a witch or a heretic, and either killed or disowned or lose all of his power because of it. Now, in his book, Isaac Newton, the person who reinvented the universe, author Florian Freistetter, depicted Newton as a thoughtless genius no social skills and a harsh demeanor who, despite this scientific acumen, was also devoted to alchemy. Getting all my info from the New York Post. Alchemy was not merely a hobby for Newton, the author wrote. If anything, it would be closer to the truth to call Newton's research into physics a hobby, that he fitted in between his theological and alchemical studies. He was so obsessed with his hocus pocus that he built his own chimneys and furnaces for conducting experiments. He considered the pursuit of alchemy so sacred, he never spoke about it in public, writing only about it in code. However, back then it was dangerous to do as well. Newton kept his alchemical recipes deliberately confusing. His recipe for a philosopher's stone that suggested a stone that supposedly multiplied gold contained ingredients like fiery dragons, doves of Diana, and eagles of Mercury. He saw alchemy just as another way to understand the universe, and was convinced that the true God is present everywhere, not only in spiritual form, but also in substance. And there were signs early on that Newton, born in January 1643 in England, would not take a traditional path through life. He was a strange person from the moment he was born. When his father died before his birth, and his remarried mother sending him off to live with his grandparents, Newton, smarter than his peers, lived an isolated young life. A diary he wrote at 19 contained many entries typical of a young man his age, admitting he was guilty of peevishness with his mother, for example, but also lines about wishing death and hoping it to some, and threatening my father and mother Smith to burn them and the house over them. When he embarked on his scientific career, he sacrificed way more than most in the search for ultimate truth. He very much was not a regular fellow. He did many types of experiments. Newton got deeper into alchemy, choosing the pseudonym Jehovah Sanctum Unus, or Holy God, to use among his fellow practitioners. He even dared to predict when the world might end. Based on extensive studies of biblical texts, he estimated that the world would reset in 2060, when the kingdom of God would prevail on earth. Now, Newton castigated other doomsday prophecies for foretelling a more imminent apocalypse. Now, I'm just skipping over a lot, but eventually I might do a show on Newton, because there's a lot to know about him. He died in March of 1727, while his fascinations with alchemy shows a slightly loopy side of the scientist, it should not detract from his reputation or legacy as one of the world's greats. It's just amazing that he did a lot more than just physics, and a lot of it was kind of proven to not even work. He was an interesting fellow, but that doesn't mean we can't love him. So, quick reminder, you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. For me, I find it amazing that Newton even attempted to guess when the world was going to end by extensive biblical study. Whether this is true or not, we'll have to wait till 2060 and see. Who knows, maybe the world will end in 2060 with the way global warming is going. Either way, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Now, The next thing I want to quickly cover is the father of our calendar. Now, I want to cover him because I think it would be interesting to see kind of his life and his fascination with the calendar. Now, the calendar that now bears his name is the Gregorian calendar, which was just an expanded upon Julian calendar. But what was the Pope's name that created this calendar? It's Pope Gregory the 13th. Original name of Ugo Boncompagni or Buoncompagni, who was born in June 7th of 1502 in Bologna, Romagna, Italy, and died on April 10th, 1585 in Rome, Papal States. Pope from 1572 to 1585. And he's the one who promulgated the Gregorian calendar and founded the system of seminars for Roman Catholic priests. A lot of my info is coming from Britannica, Encyclopedia Britannica. He was educated at the University of Bologna. He taught jurisprudence there from 1531 to 1539. Because of his expertise in canon law, he was sent by Pope Pius IV in 1561 to the Council of Trento, Italy, where he remained until 1563. Pius made him a cardinal in 1565, an emissary to Spain. He was then elected to Pope on May 14th, 1572, succeeding St. Pius V. Gregory began promoting church reform and the Counter-Reformation by pledging to execute the Reformation decrees of the Council of Trent. He appointed committees of cardinals to investigate abuses among ecclesiastics and to draft the Index Liberum Prohibitorum, Index of Forbidden Books, to carry out the council's decree ordering the establishment of seminaries. He found several colleges and seminaries, including the Gregorian University, and delegated their discretion to the Jesuits, whom he patronized. The schools trained missionaries for those countries that had established Protestant state religions. And he was criticized for backing the Irish rebels against the anti-Catholic acts of Queen Elizabeth I of England and for his reaction to the massacre of St. Bartholomew's Day, the slaughter of Huguenots, French Protestants, that began in Paris on August 24th, 1572, and spread throughout France. He celebrated the massacre with a Te Deum, hymn of praise to God at Rome. He was aided chiefly by Neapolitan astronomer and physicist Luigi Lillo Giraldi, died in 1576, and the German Jesuit and mathematician Christopher Clavius. Gregory corrected the errors of the Julian calendar created by Julius Caesar in 46. The new Gregorian calendar, introduced on February 24th, 1882, in the bull of the Inter Gravissimas and the Gravest Concern, advanced the date by 10 days. October 1st was followed by October 15th of that year, and relied on a new method of calculating leap years. Although the reform was welcomed by such astronomers as Johannes Kepler and Tycho Brahe, and by the Catholic princes of Europe, many Protestants saw it as the work of the Antichrist and refused to adopt it. The Gregorian calendar was gradually accepted by the countries of Europe, though Russia did not accept it until 1918. Gregory's building program included the Quirinal Palace in Rome, along with his political ventures, together exhausted the papal treasury, causing serious repercussions in the papal states. We gotta go to a quick break, but when we come back, we will cover a little bit more about New Year's and maybe have a few New Year's type songs. So stay tuned here on CILU 102.7 FM.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, an inclusive spiritual community promoting a compassionate, just, and sustainable world. Find them online at luf.ca, on Facebook, or at 129 South Algoma, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. The Live from the Rock Folk Festival, bringing the spirit of folk and folk music to Red Rock every August. Keep up to date with upcoming happenings and buy tickets online at livefromtherockfolkfestival.com. The Outpost, Lakehead University's pub, full-service restaurant, and live music venue. Find them on Facebook to stay up to date on all the happenings during the school year, like Tanker Tuesdays and Pub Night Thursdays.
Welcome back. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. If you're just coming, welcome to the show. We got about a half hour left. If you've been with us the whole time, thanks for staying tuned in. You are listening to It's Pretty Trivial, and we've been just talking about Pope Gregory the 13th. We talked a little bit about the Gregorian calendar, Chinese New Year, the end of the world, and little bits and pieces of the regular New Year. Now, in the second half, I think I'm going to cover a little bit more of the actual New Year's facts, and I hope to play a couple songs that really kind of fit the bill of New Year's. Now, I think for the second half, I'm going to cover a lot of different types of New Year's facts, and I'm going to cover some that I don't think I've covered before. So I'm going to get a lot of my facts for this from goodhousekeeping.com. Now, let's see what we can find. So, now, the baby New Year has been a symbol of the holidays since around 600 BC, setting in ancient Greece, when an infant was paraded around in a basket in celebration of Dionysus, the god of fertility and wine, and the baby represents a rebirth that occurs at the start of each new year. Now, long before it was used as New Year, a bulb of England's Royal Observatory in Greenwich was dropped at 1 p.m. every day, starting in 1833, to help ship captains coordinate their navigation equipment. Similar bulbs were set up in coastal areas around the world. That means that the New Year's bulb was not created just for New Year's. It was actually invented to help sailors. Now, the next is kind of something I've talked a little bit, kind of alluded to. But the annual tradition of gathering in Times Square for New Year's started as a party to celebrate the opening of the New York Times building in 1904, where over 200,000 people attended. One of the main kind of corner buildings in Times Square was the original New York Times building, and eventually has now become covered with big electronic signs. It kind of gives the essence of Times Square. Though many parties happened, there wasn't a ball drop until 1907. Fireworks were previously used to welcome the new year, but they were banned because burning embers were falling on the crowd. A ball being lowered on a flagpole was a safer bet. And since it started, it's become a spectacle every year, except during the Second World War in 1942 and 43. And when that happened, the revelers in Times Square observed a moment of silence at midnight instead. Now, the ball's weight has actually kind of changed over time. It was originally made of 700 pounds of iron and wood, but was reduced to just 400 pounds of wrought iron before it was switched to an aluminum frame in 1955. The now 11,875-pound ball didn't get its new look and material until the millennium, when Waterford partnered with Philips Lighting to create a shimmery LED display. And every year, there's a new pattern on the ball. It's made up of over 2,688 crystal triangles, and has over 32,000 lights. It also displays over 16 million color patterns. 2018's design was called what? It's called the Gift of Serenity, which included cuts that resembled butterflies drifting through the air. Now, what else did they do as part of the New Year celebrations in Times Square? Well, they drop confetti. Now, it's not a new concept, but in 2015, wishfetti became a part of the tradition. People write their wishes for the new year and submit them to have the wish wall in Times Square or online, and those wishes are turned into the confetti that falls over the crowd at midnight. And there's about 2,000 pounds of confetti. This can be a problem as it can take days to clean up after the New Year celebrations. Now, instead of a ball, some cities ring in the new year with an orange. Now, where is this? Well, the raising of Mr. Neon, a 35-foot sunglass-clad metal fruit, has been a tradition for over 30 years. And this is in Miami, Florida. Well, they will do that instead of a ball drop. Now, there is also another interesting thing that happens in Florida. In Key West, a drag queen descends into a shoe. The female impersonator named Sushi is lowered from a bar rooftop in a giant red high-heeled shoe. This has been happening since 1996. Another interesting fact is something that happens in Pennsylvania. Now, what happens there? Hershey, Pennsylvania, drops a giant kiss to ring in the new year. Other Pennsylvania towns have traditions that play off their names. In Mechanicsburg, they drop a wrench. In Dillsburg, they drop a pickle. I find that kind of funny and think it's kind of a neat idea. Now, how much wine, sparkling wine, about do Americans drink on New Year's? Americans drink around 360 million glasses of sparkling wine on New Year's. Corks can fly out of bottles at a speed of what? At a speed of 25 miles an hour. So they should be open at a 45 degree angle and pointed away from yourself and anyone else. What amazes me about how many glasses I drank on New Year's is that 360 million glasses with only about 330, 340 million people in the States. That means pretty much everyone in the States has wine, which would not be true because kids would not. But I guess it kind of makes sense because people might have one or two glasses, but that is still a lot. The next is, how did the New Year's kiss start? Well, although things got a little friskier back then, ancient Romans are credited with the kissing tradition because of their Saturnalia festival. It was a celebration honoring Saturn, the god of time, where all social norms went out the window. Many of the celebrations influenced Christmas and New Year's festivals that became the focus when Christianity took over the Roman Empire. Now, what country rings in the New Year first? Kiribati, also known as Christmas Island, which is located in the Central Pacific. They celebrate throughout the nation at each village's maniba, or meeting house, where all social and political activities